I'm confused. After 40 years, people still tell me that they have seen another spa that's as good as a Royal Spa. I've given tours to engineering groups who see our operation and ask, how can anyone buy from others when Royal Spa products are so much better? The answer is that lots of people don't take the time to understand the unbelievable differences. Come into any of our locations and make the salesperson prove the superiority of the Royal Spa product.
Royal Spa.
Only the best run here at the Indianapolis 500.
Mario, who do you feel you'll have to beat in this year's race?
People like A.J. Foyt and Bobby Unser, for instance.
Stand by for the checkered flag.
Absolutely incredible. Danny Sullivan spun in front of Mario Andretti.
A.J. has done it. He has won his fourth Indianapolis 500.
Beyond the Bricks with Jay Query and Mike Thompson. Brought to you by Quality Supply and Tool. Think outside the box. Store on 93.5 and 107.5, The Fan.
On an absolutely gorgeous, and I mean gorgeous, Thursday evening in Indianapolis with the weekend of the NASCAR Brickyard 400 upon us. Of course, IndyCar will be in Toronto, but we are here to talk about the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, which will host the stock cars this weekend, the 30th year, as a matter of fact. We've talked plenty about that over the course of the week. My name is Jake Query. We'll hear from Mike Thompson in just a minute. Nathaniel, don't call me Atticus Finch, is filling in for Eddie Garrison this evening. And I want to thank first and foremost all of those that came out to the fans' golf outing today at Back Nine on the south side of Indianapolis. Great time and plenty of great folks that we saw there, different sponsors of the radio station, and of course, all of it benefiting Franciscan Health and the Franciscan Health Foundation. So much appreciated for everybody that has come out. Mike Thompson, we will in just a few minutes bring a guest onto the program. It's been actually, I'm not sure how many times we have done that on Beyond the Bricks, which is fun and exciting, but we talked for the last two shows, that would be Monday and then last night, about the great Parnelli Jones and the legacy that he leaves in the sport of racing after losing Parnelli in early June. And one of the things and themes, I think, Mike, about Parnelli Jones that comes into play when discussing him is simply the fact that he was so much more than just the 1963 Indianapolis 500 winner. He was a guy that was involved in various forms of motorsports and various forms of the automobile, whether it be selling parts of it, whether it be owning them, whether it be different, really any series that he wanted to run. And I think it's really, really neat, Mike, and I give you all the credit in the world for lining up tonight, who we will bring on in just a couple of minutes here, but a gentleman who was able to kind of see up close and personal all those aspects of Parnelli Jones.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I mean, they were teammates. You know, they raced against each other, but they were teammates. And actually, Parnelli Jones called the person that we're going to have on as our special guest tonight one of the greatest drivers he ever raced against, and had just glowing things to say about our special guest tonight. Said, and he is, he's our special guest tonight, is one of the truly great American race drivers of all time. I mean, drove in Formula One, drove in NASCAR, drove Indy cars, Can-Am champion, Trans-Am champion. I mean, the list goes on and on, just a absolutely amazing, superlative talent. And so I'm very excited that we're going to have a special guest tonight joining us. Mr. George Fulmer will be joining us tonight.
George Fulmer, of course, as we had mentioned, he was teammates in the Trans-Am with Parnelli Jones. He also was the only driver to win the Trans-Am and Can-Am title in the same year. He drove in the Indianapolis 500 three times. That would be in 1969, 1970, and 1971. And even though he was really primarily, Mike, I think probably to a lot of people, at least in the early years, thought of as more of a road racer, that's not to say in the open wheel side that he wasn't also somebody who was able to pick up wins in IndyCar.
Yeah, and I mean, you're right. He was thought of mainly as a road racer. That's what he's known for, and he had a spectacular road racing career. But he showed the field in 1969 at Phoenix, and that's one of the topics I'd like to talk to him about tonight is – in 1969, Phoenix, driving for himself, he had his own team. He had a chassis called the Cheetah. And I know your good friend, the late Robin Miller, that was one of his favorite cars, is that the George Fulmer had a car called the Cheetah, and it was powered by a stock block Chevy. And George Fulmer went out there in Phoenix and won the race. And that was his lone IndyCar win, but I'm just absolutely dominant, you know, performance one at Phoenix with the cheetah and the stock block. So that was your late friend, Robin Miller, both of our friend, Robin Miller's, one of his favorite wins was George Fulmer in 1969 at Phoenix.
Essentially, like so many drivers that we talk about on this program, if it had four wheels and a steering wheel, he was probably going to race it, run it, and race it well. As a matter of fact, three top five finishes and a pole in the NASCAR side of things, two starts in the Daytona 500. We mentioned three starts in the Indianapolis 500, multiple years of being in Indianapolis beyond that. Also drove in the IROC series, won there at Riverside, and joins us now on Beyond the Bricks. It is our distinct pleasure tonight to welcome to the program George Fulmer. George, first off, welcome to Indianapolis, and thanks so much for your time this evening.
Well, thank you for calling. It's beautiful out here. I'm sure it's nice in Indianapolis. So
it is wonderful here. It is wonderful here. Now, you are out west, correct?
Yes, I'm in Southern California. Well, actually, now I'm in the... where am I?
I was thinking Arizona, actually, but then I thought I had read Idaho as well, but Southern California would definitely work,
it's,
George.
It's Idaho.
Yeah. Well, hey, with the number of Californians moving to Idaho these days, George, I understand why you'd think it's California as well, right? We know that all too well.
That's very, very true, very true.
Let's begin with this, sir, and I appreciate your time tonight. I want to talk about a number of different things, but before we get to most of that, I guess to put kind of a tie on it, we've been talking a lot about Pernelli Jones, who, of course, you know, passed since we last were doing this show. And, you know, you were a teammate of Parnelli's. So let me open the floor to you to begin with, just on your overall thoughts, impressions, and memories of one of the all-time greats.
Well, I have great memories with him, and he was a great friend. We hit it off well, and we respected each other. And we had a lot of opportunities to do things together and run on the same team. And it was... He was a great guy. I see him, very good race driver, and I learned a lot from him because he was more experienced than I was when I was coming up. So, but he was helpful and just became a good friend too.
George, Parnelli told me once that you were one of the absolute greatest drivers he raced against. That's pretty high praise, and that has to mean a lot to you that Parnelli said that about you.
Well, I do appreciate that, and we raced well together. We were teammates, but I didn't make it that we didn't race each other because we'd race each other pretty hard.
We talked a little bit about it in the opening before we brought you on. I want to ask you about that victory you had at Phoenix. Robin Miller, the late Robin Miller, that was one of his favorite victories ever by anybody in IndyCar racing. The day you won driving for yourself in the Cheetah with the stock block Chevy. Tell us a little bit about that victory in 1969 at Phoenix.
Well, I was kind of still struggling to get a good ride with a good team, and I had my own car, and it was a Cheetah, which was a two-frame car. So, and I couldn't afford a Ford four cam engine, so I had a Albarts build me a Chevy, and it was a regular Chevy block. You know, wasn't super light or anything like that. I was just a regular stock car block. So, but it ran well, and I made it to balance out all right. It's a little heavier, but we got through it, and good engine, ran like a clock.
George, when I think back to George Fulmer is our guest. In your era, you know, so many racing heroes, and I think that for guys like myself and Mike and racing fans today, we have such an appreciation and a respect for what you guys did in the fact that, you know, you were the old school racers, right? You raced anything. I mean, if there was an opportunity there, you were going to get in it, whether it be Formula One, whether it be stock cars, whether it be, you know, IROC, you name it. there are still racers that do that today, but they are fewer and further between. It's more specialized now. How difficult was it to kind of go from one series or one car to another, and how long would it take to kind of truly get the feel of the balance of a car if it was a different series or car than what you had been racing, say, the previous season?
Well, I think the different drivers have a different learning curve for a car. I learned them pretty well, and I fortunately had pretty good road race cars, and that's what we were racing then with the stock block. So it was a good experience, but it was hard running your own team with no money.
George, I want to ask you about when you drove with Penske with driving that Porsche when you filled in for Mark Donohue and you won the Can-Am mm-hmm. Championship. If I know it's hard to pick one favorite car that you drove in because you drove so many wonderful cars, but when I talk to people about you, they always mention that car. Is that a favorite of yours? If you had to pick one,
well, that was probably the best car I've ever had a chance to drive. It was a good car. It was well sorted and well funded, and all I had to do was drive it, and that was a new experience. So it worked out pretty well, and the car was a good car. It drove well, and it didn't have any bad matters, and just had good luck with it.
When you look back on your racing career, which series is it that you most frequently find yourself daydreaming about and reliving, if you will?
Oh, yeah, I've done so much, it would be kind of hard to pin that down. But I have an awful lot of road racing experience, and that was probably my forte, and I probably did that better than any of them. And so I always enjoyed road racing because it was a little more challenging for me, and I learned of coming up. That was the way I came up, and so I knew it better. So it was easier for me to adapt to a road race car. So that was why I liked the road racing. And yeah, road racing's fun. It's it's not so boring. But I did run my car in Indy cars, and I won Phoenix with it. And that was a stock block car with a Chevy in it. So that hasn't been done ever since, and I don't think it's ever done before. But it was, we sat up in the front row, and we won the race, and that was... It was a nice victory because it was a good USAC field. So,
well, I was going to ask you about Indianapolis in general. You know, not just, and obviously, you know, IndyCar Racing Phoenix is a great place, no question. A lot of great memories and a lot of great racers that have come through there. But your memories of just not even necessarily the Indianapolis 500, which you ran in, 69 to 71, but just the Indianapolis Motor Speedway in general. What the track means, what it meant to go and race there, and what it means to have your name in part of its history.
Well, it means a lot because the things you say about it is very true. It's an exceptional place. It's a famous racetrack and has had a lot of great people come from that era. I was just fortunate enough to get in it and run well, and I did well with stock block cars. So I won that one race. I had a stock block Chevy. So Phoenix.
George, I want to ask you. I wanted to ask you about your Formula One career briefly. You when you guys drove with Shadow. You were really quick right out of the box. You scored points. Back then, they were only paying points the first six positions, and you scored points in the first two races, got a podium in your second career Formula One race. What do you remember about that great Shadow team you guys had?
Well, the Channel was a good car, and I seemed to adapt to it pretty well. I had to find a train myself a little bit to not have so much horsepower that like I was used to with the V8s, but it ran well, and we had a good Cosworth engine, and I liked to race, and it was a good race car, so that's all you need.
And then you also ran, people may not remember, but you also ran in NASCAR with Bud Moore, who you obviously had an association with Trans Ams previously. But what drew you to wanting to do the NASCAR program? Because you had some top fives and ran really well in NASCAR as well. You had a pole as well.
Well, you have to look for places where you can race and compete and hopefully make some money. And I had a chance to run some NASCAR races, and worked out pretty well for me. I didn't have the Cosworth engine, but I had some good Fords. I had some Fords engine, but they were all rocker Fords. So it was a good experience, and then I learned a lot. But it's hard to beat those race motors.
Well, George, while we have you, we want you to be able to go down memory lane again, and we're going to play for you Mike Thompson, who's the other voice that you hear in this program, is an audio historian. He has clips of about every race I think it's ever taken place. But this is your win at Riverside in IROC. Now, Mike, set us up for us here in terms of what we're about to hear that you've come up with.
Yeah, this is George Fulmer winning IROC at Riverside in 73-74 season they had, and this is the second IROC race, and George Fulmer wins the second IROC race and dominating fashion, and this is a huge victory that was on ABC Sports, and you'll have Keith Jackson and Jackie Stewart calling the race here.
All right, so George, enjoy your trip down memory lane here, and then we'll get your comments on the other
Thank
side,
you.
But here it is from Riverside. Hang on just a second and enjoy this.
George Fulmer has driven himself a heck of a car race. Here you see David Pearson way back there in second place, and the white car just coming around in view is Emerson Fittipaldi.
What a wonderful race George Fulmer's had. He's had a great day. Mind you, he's had a lot of experience in this kind of motor car. But at the 1972 Can-Am champion really has shown his experience. Of course, he went to Europe in 1973 and raced there a lot. He's a very experienced driver in all categories of racing. And here he is on the very last lap in turn 9. Must be very content. He's kept out of trouble. He's driven very smoothly. And he's brought the car home in one piece. A very happy man. This is a very important race for him. He's picking up points that he desperately needs, and he comes up to the finishing line to take the checkered flag for first position.
George Fulmer, right here, the winner. And remember, the rotation of the drivers in the third elimination race, and incredibly, George Fulmer will start his third successive race next week at the back of the pack. George now totals 21 points, and he leads in the point total.
We had to take you down memory lane there a little bit, George, and we really appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, that was quite a feat to do that, because I did that all in a stock block car. I did in an IndyCar venue, so it was quite an accomplishment.
Well, we really appreciate you taking the time to talk with us. It's a great honor to speak with you tonight, George, and thank you for talking to us tonight.
Thank you guys for calling, and I hope you have a good day, and maybe sometime we'll talk again.
Sounds good, George. Very much appreciated. George Fulmer joining us on the program. Mike, first comment I got, great to hear a legend like George on the show. Well done, guys. Heck yeah. Totally agree. That is, anytime you could talk to racing royalty like that and somebody that was able to get into a seat fitting in variations. Mike, I've got the utmost respect for, Dario Franchitti once said, I remember doing a Q&A with him, I believe it was at Mid-Ohio one year, and it was right after he had gone over and had a cup of coffee in NASCAR, and somebody asked him about it. And he said, going from IndyCar to NASCAR and then back to IndyCar, I've mentioned this before, he said it was like going from a Corvette to a school bus. And back to, a Ferrari or a Corvette. And I don't think, Mike, you know, guys like the two of us have a love for the sport and appreciation for the sport, but it doesn't mean that we have an intimate knowledge of the inner workings of feeling out the sport. And I think sometimes we overlook the challenge it would be to go from one car to another and just get your bearings and feel for that, oftentimes just in time to be able to hop out of it and get in another ride. It truly is remarkable when you talk to somebody that has that sort of a vast resume.
Oh, it is. And just think about, again, what he accomplished. He drove in Indy cars and won a race. He drove in the Indianapolis 500 three times. He won a pole in NASCAR, and he had several top five finishes in NASCAR. You know, he was the Trans Am champion. He was the Can-Am champion. He had a podium in Formula One when that wasn't – that was a big deal, obviously, to get a podium in Formula One against the drivers of the time, you know. So just an amazing resume. One of the truly great, and I'll say, and Parnelli Jones said this before, one of the most underrated drivers. You know, people really need to know the legend that is George Fulmer. And when I found out that there was a possibility, one of our loyal listeners actually said, "Hey, there's a possibility you might be able to get George Fulmer on the show." And I was like, "Really? We can get George Fulmer to come on our show?" And he helped us along a little bit. Matt is a loyal listener, and he put me in touch with George's nephew, and it was really cool because George's nephew said, "Yeah, give him a call. He'd love to do it." And I called him up, and he said, "Yeah, I'd love to be on the show." So I was ecstatic. You know what? You know, I love talking to guys like George Fulmer, and you know, doing those type of interviews, and it's, you know, it's really fun to be able to bring the stories of the people, like you said, who were there and who were that versatile and jumping from series to series to series. I mean, in IROC, he was racing against Emerson Fittipaldi and David Pearson and Richard Petty in the same race in a Porsche, you know? So it's just an amazing story. And I'm so glad that we were able to bring it to folks tonight.
And you could tell his excitement in hearing that clip from Riverside. So kudos for pulling that up, Mike. The two things to me that are probably the most incredulous in terms of my reception of absorbing it tonight would be, number one, looking over the vast resume of George Fulmer and coming to grasp that. And number two, the fact that you said we have a loyal listener. Those are the two things to me that just continue to surprise me, right?
Well, we also, not only do we have multiple loyal listeners, because in our last segment, we actually have one of our requests tonight from another loyal listener. So it's kind of a big show with our loyal listeners tonight.
We're doing what we can tonight, right? Spinning
That's
the
right.
hits, and we continue to do it on the other side, taking a look at the history of why this weekend is even upon us, talking about the Brickyard 400 stock cars, NASCAR, coming to the most hallowed ground in North American motorsports, maybe even in terms of racing in the world. And we will get into exactly that when we come back to this, the Thursday edition of Beyond.
Hey, you. Yeah, you. This is your dentist. Do me a favor and feel the front of your teeth. How grimy are they?
Ugh.
It's time for a Crest Pro Health reality checkup. That grime is the buildup of plaque bacteria that can cause cavities in just months. You need to switch to Crest Pro Health. While most toothpaste stop working in minutes, Crest Pro Health's antibacterial fluoride protects for up to 12 hours to stop cavities before they start. So pick up some Crest Pro Health ASAP. Smile. Crest has you covered.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
On the Bricks.
This is Beyond the Bricks, brought to you by Quality Supply and Tool. Think outside the box. Store on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan.
Jake Query, Mike Thompson, Nathaniel Finch running things for us tonight. Thank you to George Fulmer for joining us on this installment of Beyond the Bricks. And thanks to all of you who listen to this show, especially after the fact in podcast form. It is always a pleasure to have people come up to me at different racetracks to mention the fact that they enjoy it. As I have said on numerous occasions and will repeat now, I am the guy that strictly has my hands on the wheel while it's in cruise control. It is Mike Thompson that does every single other aspect of this program, including putting together all of the audio coming out. And I think we have, Nathaniel, do we not, by the way, because usually we bounce back with a commercial. Little Kroger box lunch. Are you in the mood for a little box lunch, Mike?
I am ready for some box lunch right now.
You going with the turkey, the ham, the fried chicken, whatever you'd like?
Well, this spot's a fried chicken spot.
I love it. All right, here is Kroger getting you set for the Brickyard 400 or anything else at IMS.
Sports fans, scoop Pelay at the Indianapolis 500, where the word today is bucket, not bucket seats, but buckets of new deli fried chicken from Kroger. What could be more natural at this mecca of speed than speedy fried chicken from the Kroger Deli? But even though it's fast, Kroger Deli fried chicken is delicious, full of flavor, tenderness, and juiciness, and wait till you taste the special breading. Pick up just as much as you want, one leg or a whole box full, and it's fast. Just zip into the Kroger Deli, pay for your fried chicken right there, and zip out again so quick you don't even have a chance to get into high gear. For delicious chicken fast, Kroger takes the checkered flag. Now back to you, Walter.
Thank you, Scoop. The box lunch including two pieces of golden fried chicken, one stacked ham sandwich, baked beans, potato salad, a brownie, and an apple, only $2.99. Check the white pages for the Kroger Deli nearest you.
Now, Mike, I don't know if that makes me Walter and you Scoop or the other way around, but Walter and Scoop were doing their thing in roughly what year?
That was around 82 with Walter and Scoop were pulling that off.
Just $2.99.
The stack ham. That was you could tell that was a callback to Sid, you know, Sid selling the meat as well, the stack
right.
ham.
We don't know if it's Stark and Wetzel ham or not, but that brownie and a banana and an apple, by the way. Got to keep the doctor
well,
away.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's a square meal in the box lunch.
Well, 1982 during those box lunches would have been just 12 years before the first running of the Brickyard 400. And even in 1982, probably the idea of stock cars coming and running on the 9-degree banking 12 minutes of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway were surely a thing of a very, very far away future. But it was not as far away as people realized because it would all come to be in 1994 when, in fact, NASCAR would culminate a relationship with the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and running the inaugural Brickyard 400 30 years ago. Donald Davidson is the historian emeritus, of course, of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and tells the story of the origins of NASCAR and the Brickyard.
I mean, the rumors about NASCAR coming to the Speedway, I think probably there was some investigation in 53, 54, because Bill France had actually gone to AAA and suggested that they run stock cars, have a stock car circuit. And they said, thanks, but no thanks. And so that's why he formed NASCAR. Because if it hadn't, and he had another association just immediately before that. But they did pitch AAA, and AAA just basically either said we're not interested or they did nothing about it. So then NASCAR then begins to get a bit of a foothold. And I know that Tony Holman was approached, and I think that Tony, who was on the conservative side, probably thought there was a lot of thought to the fact that there's so much mystique about the 500 because it's one race a year. We don't run every weekend. We don't run several times during the summer. It's over on May 30th, and that's it until May the 1st of the following year. And I think there was a lot to be said that to sort of kind of keep it sacred, if you like, or at least not spoil the huge following that they had. So I think Tony was probably pitched from time to time, and there were discussions. And then when John Cooper, who had very strong Speedway connections, but very strong NASCAR ties as well, in and out and in and out. And when he became the president of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, it was the first time that they'd had a day-to-day president who was on the grounds every day. Darrell Waltrip came up to visit one time, and this is probably I don't even know if I could put a date on it, but it was several years before it actually happened, and they drove around and thought, what if? And I know one year there seemed to be quite a strong possibility that there might be a NASCAR race here. And then the members of the family thought, no, we don't want to do that. And then then it sort of started to pick up again. And between Bill France Jr. and Tony George, probably they started talking maybe 90, 91. And then they had a feasibility run here, I think, in 92, and then a couple of very serious tests. I remember the one that just really amazed everybody was that they arranged a test, I think, in 93, right after Michigan. Michigan was on a Sunday, and then Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, they were going to run the test. And when that was known, the truck drivers coming off the freeway and down to 16th Street, they were amazed that there was this reception on Sunday night with hundreds and hundreds of people out there to welcome the haulers for a test. We probably have something here. And so they went out and ran with groups of cars, singles, and then groups of cars. And then at some point, apparently Bill France Jr. and Tony George turned to each other, shook hands, and lit up cigars, and that was it.
Mike, there's no doubt about the fact that, in particular in the early years, it was a marriage that was celebrated by nearly everyone. The Brickyard 400, especially in its original installment, was a massive success.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they had so many ticker requests, more than they could handle, and just huge success. And you couldn't ask for a better first winner for what they were looking for and hoping for than Jeff Gordon, obviously. And then a second winner in Dale Earnhardt, you know, the biggest star at the time. So, I mean, just it couldn't have worked out any better.
I have told the story before, and I'll do it briefly here, but to put this in perspective, in the early years of the Brickyard 400, I, for example, as a much younger person, was just cutting my teeth into the sports media world, albeit probably at a later age than I should have. But and in that capacity, I remember in 1998, I was working at Channel 6 as essentially a behind-the-scenes producer part-time, and they came to me and said, listen, the Colts have a scrimmage against the St. Louis Rams in Champaign, Illinois on Sunday, and we are going to send you with the photographer to do the interviews afterwards. And I was hugely disappointed by that because of the fact that, and the reason they were sending me is because literally every single person was staying back for the nonstop beginning at 5 a.m. coverage of the Brickyard 400, which that year I believe would have been the, 94, 5, 6, 7, so the fifth running of the Brickyard 400. So I tell people all the time, if you want to know how big the Brickyard was in its early years, in Peyton Manning's first ever scrimmage against another NFL team, he walked into a locker room afterwards and talked to two media members, myself and Mike Chappell of the Indianapolis Star, because every other single media member of Indianapolis was covering the Brickyard 400, which greatly prioritized over Peyton Manning or the Indianapolis Colts. Now, that's not to say that because of the massive crowds that there wasn't still at times awkward moments that happened between dignitaries, between the series and the track itself. I once saw a NASCAR official grab by the arm Mary Holman George out of the garage area because she didn't have on the proper credential, even though she obviously was the owner of the Speedway. That quickly was resolved, I can assure you. But, Mike, the reality is there are other stories about funny stories, I guess, if you will, or flippant ones about people that were high up but didn't necessarily always get treated as such, right?
Yeah, and I don't know that Bill France Sr. thought it was very funny. One of the stories that's gone around for years is that Bill France Sr. was kicked out of the Speedway multiple times after he formed NASCAR, and so we wanted to play tonight whether that's true or false. And, of course, the historian emeritus Donald Davidson's the perfect guy to ask for that, so I pulled out a clip for that.
So was Bill France once kicked out of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway? Bill France Sr., here's Donald Davidson.
Escorted to the door, perhaps. It was because of the fact that you didn't have the FIA's involvement with interchange of drivers. And so AAA and then USAC in its early days was not very benevolent about visitors that were considered not in good standing. And I think there was two or three times at least where Bill France came and got a credential from somebody and was just in the pits and garage area. And the word went out and he was escorted to the door. I thought that happened, I think, probably about three times. But there is a little bit of trivia that goes back. Bill France Sr. was a crew member at the track in 1938 for Joel Thorne. And there are photographs. Wow. I mean, this is more than just a rumor. There's at least two photographs of Bill France standing behind Joel Thorne's car, and then another one with him working. The concentration in the garage is of the people in the foreground. But if you look in the background, here's Bill France Sr. working a lathe or something. But anyway, that was rather unfortunate that he was escorted to the door. I don't know that thrown out is probably a little bit strong, anyway, finally that was resolved when they started to have the interchange of drivers and the sort of like the working agreement between sanctioning bodies.
Donald Davidson with the courteous chuckle there, by the way. By say courteous, I mean courtesy of Kevin Lee, the chuckle there that you hear in the background as well from a past talk of Gasoline Alley, talking about Bill France Sr., that 1938 photo that Donald would be referencing, or two of them. Probably available, by the way, at the incredible photo archive that exists within the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, where you can go and look through and make selection and even purchase, if you would like, from the incredible archives of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. When we come back, more on NASCAR, the Brickyard 400, and, of course, some fabulous promotions and even giveaways, maybe? Not from us, but we'll talk about some of those that might have happened. With the Brickyard 400 on this version, I almost said installment of Beyond the Brick.
Before New Cascade Platinum Plus, I would pre-rinse all my dishes because my old detergent just wouldn't get them clean. But now, I do dishes differently. A no pre-wash, no rewash, money-back guaranteed kind of different. Because Cascade Platinum Plus has double the grease-fighting power of Dawn built right in, with twice the scrubbing power, giving me a clean that lets me break all the dish rules. I just scrape, load, and I'm done. Yep. So clean. With Cascade Platinum Plus, I dare to dish differently.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
This is Beyond the Bricks, brought to you by Quality Supply and Tool. Think outside the box. Store on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan.
How about this, Mike? Turning back the clock a little bit, right?
We got the Tragically Hip, my second favorite band of all time. And the reason we're playing the Tragically Hip and giving them a shout out is they're going to be on David Malukas's car in Toronto this weekend. And the Tragically Hip, they are the Grand Marshals, the surviving members. Unfortunately, we lost lead singer Gord Downie a couple years ago to a brain cancer. But the Tragically Hip's going to be in Toronto, Jake. And so you got to get a picture of the Tragically Hip for me.
Do I need them holding up a sign for you or anything? Maybe a Beyond the Brick sign? Would that be
cool?
Yeah. I mean, now,
yeah, so.
Here's my – I have two questions real quick, Mike. The first would be, if they are your second favorite band, who is your favorite?
My favorite band of all time is the Beatles, but my second – my 1A is the Tragically
Hip. Okay, now, the other thing about the Tragically Hip, I thought that when Downie passed away that they had a pledge that they were not going to reform as in that name – under the same name. Did I misread
that's
that?
That's correct. they don't sing. They did sing at the Juno Awards a couple years ago for the first time without Gord Downie, but they are appearing. They do appearances and things like that, and basically in his honor, but they don't really sing or tour anymore.
Gotcha. Okay, now, while we're talking pop culture, Parnelli Jones mentioned once being in a movie. You have dug into the audio archives to find not only the correct name, but the trailer, correct?
Yes. The other night we played the clip and he said it was, he named this movie and I couldn't find it. I kept looking it up and he called it some kind of Crash of the Checkers or something like that. And I was like, I couldn't find it. Well, then I found out the actual name of the film is Checkered Flag or Crash. And I found the trailer for the movie. It is absolutely unbelievable. So we have it tonight.
No-holds-barred chase over 1,000 miles of the world's roughest terrain. Joe Don Baker as Walkaway Madden.
I'm a wrecker.
Susan Sarandon as the reporter.
Till I quit or you crash.
Alan Vint as Turtle.
I mean, the best race car driver in the world can't carry one of these across the finish line.
Larry Hagman as the promoter.
I do business the way you race cars. Win or crash.
All-time racing great, Parnelli Jones.
Fly out and fly down.
Checkered Flag or Crash.
Friday night on HBO.
Mike, what's going on there? There's a lot going on there, right? Parnelli Jones sounds flatulent.
Well, there's a lot going on. First of all, Larry Hagman's in this film, which we didn't know. Susan Sarandon's in this movie, but the top billed person is still Joe Don Baker for some reason. And then there's a guy, Alan Vint as Turtle. I mean... It's got everything.
I like the music in the background, too. It has a Smokey and the Bandit type feel to it for sure, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and there's literally the theme song for the movie is Checkered Flag or Crash. That's the theme song that this guy's singing. I mean, that trailer has everything.
Now, let me ask you this. One other thing that we need to answer here before we wrap for the evening, because you and I were talking about this. Was there once a dog given away at the Indy 500?
Yes. So, Bob... from Monroe, Michigan, which is near where I'm from in Toledo, ask whether or not a dog was actually given away as a prize in the Indianapolis 500, as one of the actual given away prizes. And I pulled a clip where Donald Davidson says that that's true, that there actually was a dog as one of the prizes.
Really? All right, here's Donald.
That was 1953. There was an outfit in Chicago. In fact, they did it twice. 53 and 54, and I can't think of the name of the outfit now, but anyway, they put up as a prize was a pedigree dog. I can't remember what type it was now.
Yeah,
but anyway, I'm sorry?
I said he didn't know that either.
I've got a note on it somewhere, but anyway, along with the dog went a case of dog food. And anyway, so I called Vukovich Jr., and I said, do you remember anything about that prize? Because your dad won the race. He said, oh, yes. He said, we got the puppy. I said, so you did take delivery of it. He said, oh, yes. He said, we had it for 7 years.
Oh,
I said, did you get a case of dog food? And he said, oh, he said, we got more. He said, we had probably had enough food for a year. But that honestly was a prize, and they only did it about 2 or 3 years. And then I said, did you get it the second year? And he said, no, he must have given it to somebody else. But I thought, boy, times have changed. Can you imagine going up to Juan Pablo Montoya and saying, here's a case of dog food?
Montoya probably, yeah, okay. I'll take the dog food, okay, right? How about that, man? Here's the other question, Mike. Like, would we have gotten into some, like, I'm a huge dog lover and pet lover. Would we have gotten into controversies then if they were just like pawning off a dog as a prize?
And food too.
Yeah, and food, right? You get the food. Now, do you think they get a cage? I mean, you know, what all went in there? So, and Donald raises a good point. If you win back to back, do you want two dogs? I mean, I would take two dogs gladly, but a lot of people probably would not, right?
Yeah, apparently he only wanted the one. But yeah, that clip was actually from 2004. So obviously the late Bill Vukovich II was still alive and Donald called and said, hey, did you get the dog? Yeah, we had the dog. Yeah, so
that is beautiful.
I had to look that one up.
So. That is beautiful. Excellent work tonight, Mike, in looking that up. And thank you to George Fulmer as well. We will do it again tomorrow night as we get you set for the Brickyard 400. Thank you so much for listening to Beyond the Bricks.
Hey, you. Yeah, you.
this is your dentist. Do me a favor and feel the front of your teeth. How grimy are they?
Ugh.
It's time for a Crest Pro Health reality checkup. That grime is the buildup of plaque bacteria that can cause cavities in just months. You need to switch to Crest Pro Health. While most toothpaste stop working in minutes, Crest Pro Health's antibacterial fluoride protects for up to 12 hours to stop cavities before they start. So pick up some Crest Pro Health ASAP. Smile. Crest has you covered.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
Introducing a fresh new way to save with your Kroger points. Choose between saving on fuel or saving on your next Kroger delivery order with new rewards cash. You'll still earn points every time you shop Kroger delivery. Then when you're ready to redeem your points, you can choose to save up to $1 per gallon at the pump or redeem your points to save on your next delivery order. It's a fresh new way to save. Your points, your choice. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Not available in all locations. Restrictions apply. See site for details.